This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Mads, you want Johnny Manziel on the Patriots or not?
Sure, why not? Yeah, I'm in. I mean, again, what's to lose here? What's to lose? You got a guy who's got talent. He's a complete knucklehead. Okay? No two ways about that. But this is precisely the guy you take a shot on, particularly that position. If maybe Bill Belichick gets through to him, or maybe it's McDaniels. Now, I have a sort of a corollary on that I'll get to in a minute. But you need a quarterback. Roll the dice. Bring him in. Hell, you brought Tebow in. This guy's better than Tebow. He certainly throws better. Give it a shot. What's the harm? If it doesn't work, you cut his ass and you're done with him.
Oh, yeah, I've been in on him since day one, and I've been waiting to be right about the guy now going on 6 years. I know he's a knucklehead, but the talent is there, and if you can get him as cheap as you're going to be able to get him, why not? Now, I don't ever expect him to be the starting quarterback of this team, maybe. I mean, a few years, if you hang on to him and you build him into what he can potentially be, he can be a stopgap if you draft someone else in the next couple of years to keep you competitive, you know, after Brady retires for a couple of seasons. But he's a better backup option to me than Brian Hoyer.
All right, that's not why I bring him in. I don't bring him in to be a backup. I bring him in to try to hit the mother load.
Exactly.
To me, give it a shot. Give it a shot. Maybe you strike gold.
Yeah, but he'd be a backup in the meantime while you're grooming
him. Yeah, no. Exactly. And I'm not saying that, if I were to bring in a guy like Manziel Murray, what I'm saying is he'd have to be your third quarterback. And now you're trying to groom him and, you know, bring him along.
But that's not the story. I mean, we're not wasting time on the show on backup quarterbacks. We're talking about finding the next
guy. Yeah, that's what I mean.
And so does Johnny Manziel fit in to the process and the whole picture of finding the next guy?
Sure.
Yes. Yep. And I'll just tell you straight out, I don't think he's good enough to play in the league. I think he feels just like a college quarterback to me. Run around, a little too small. I don't love the way he throws a football. I think he throws it like a little guy, and I don't think he's going to make it. But beggars can't be choosers.
Give it a shot.
What the hell? Maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. So maybe he can play in the league. And if he can, and you get him for nothing?
I mean, you were pro Tebow, and you're anti this guy?
Shows you I don't know what I'm looking at. Right, exactly. Don't take my word for it. So I'm just saying, if you think he's got that kind of talent, just to bring him in as the backup, I don't care. Like, we're not even going to talk about that. I don't care about the backup.
No, I'm looking to hit the jackpot here. That's what I'm doing. And this guy's a lottery ticket. Why not? Buy a $5 lottery ticket. I'm okay with it. Give it a shot. Now, my side opinion on this reeks of McDaniels to me. And I don't know why I feel this way. Maybe it's just because of Tebow Murray. Like that, you know, he's the guy who drafted Tebow, drafted him high, wanted to bring all of that. But McDaniels, to me, feels like the kind of guy that wants a newer age quarterback. You know, these mobile guys who can run around and make plays, whether it's Deshaun Watson or Johnny Manziel or take your pick, whoever it is, I feel like McDaniels is behind this.
So that's the next point to this. There are some believe, and I've heard Zoe talk about this, that the reason we haven't seen McDaniels is because he's been given one job this offseason and one job only. And if you're seen, you're seen. If you're not, you're not. We don't care. But your special assignment is identify a guy for us to take in the second or third round, and that's a guy we're going to take, and we're going to try and repeat the Garoppolo process, and you're in charge of it. And so this is the guy that drafted Tebow. This is the guy that, I guess, was instrumental in bringing him here when McDaniels was here. I mean, just go back to the time frame. Josh came here in 2012. 2012, 2013, we saw a little slippage in Tommy, a little bit. Tebow came here in 13. Garoppolo was drafted in 14. So, I don't think you draft or sign guy. I mean, maybe in some cases you do. Like, Hoyer's just a backup. But I think you always bring in a young quarterback with it in the back of your mind that, well, let's see what we got. Let's find out what the ceiling is. And so, long story short, I agree with you. I get reeks of McDaniels. If McDaniels has been charged with finding the next guy, how do you feel about it?
I don't like it. Now, look, I have my doubts about Manziel, too, but I would take a shot. Take a shot. And so but part of the reason I like the Manziel thing, because I want Belichick to get a hold of him. I want Belichick to sit down with him, slow down his brain, get him to commit to football. Like, that's the whole idea, is have Belichick sit down with him and say, hey, are you cleaned up? Are you ready to go? Because I think you have ability. And if you are willing to do what it takes, I think I can turn you into something. To me, it's about Belichick and Manziel. Like, that's what appeals to me. If it's McDaniels, you know, I don't love it as much, but it I feel like McDaniels is behind it. And I told you, I started to feel this way with the tea leaves, with you know, going back to the whole Belichick Brady thing, when we started to see in stories after they traded Garoppolo, McDaniels drafted and developed Garoppolo, and I thought, well, here we go, here comes the campaign. If we can do it, we can repeat it again. And now it's Josh who discovered Garoppolo, and Bill had nothing to do with it.
So no, I think it's, to me, it's equal parts on Garoppolo, but he definitely had something to do with the draft of Garoppolo, so that removes the stain of Tebow on him a little bit. And the other thing, in the plus column for McDaniels with quarterbacks, he was right to sniff out that Jay Cutler was a loser when he went to Denver and did everything in his power to get him the hell out of there. You know, so...
It's a good point. I mean, you know, he botched it politically.
Yeah.
But he was right about the guy's ability. I mean, Cutler's a loser. But the idea of...
So here's the thing, Murray, and I went to look this up. Josh, as an overall personnel head and in charge of the draft board, should scare the crap out of you after Denver. But that's not what, you know, he's going to be here with Caserio, right? If Josh is the next guy, it feels like that they have in mind that Nick Caserio runs the board. So perfect, right? That's out of Josh's hands.
Except for quarterback.
And I went back and looked at the drafts in Denver in 2009 and 2010.
He was responsible for Demaryius Thomas too, right?
He was responsible for Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker.
Decker's a win, but Thomas is a loser.
Okay, and I'm calling it up right now. I don't know how they got all these extra picks. Maybe it was the Cutler trade. You know, I mean, now that I think of it, it really has to be. But when you look at the draft capital that Denver team had in 2009-2010, in 2009, they had two firsts and three second-round picks. That had to be from the Cutler thing. Their first pick in 2009, 12 overall, he took no Sean Moreno, a running back. Scares the crap out of me. Second first-round pick was Robert Ayers, the defensive end.
Yeah.
Never really amounted to much. I think he could play, but he didn't really amount to much. The next year, he had two first-round picks, Demaryius Thomas, Tim Tebow. And then he got Decker later on in the draft. But when you look at what else he had with those 3 seconds, Alphonso Smith, Darcell McBath, Richard Quinn, and I don't know who these players are.
Dick Quinn.
Yeah, he had all this draft capital and just leaked it away. So if you're telling me Josh has my draft board for the next 5 years after Bill, that scares the crap out of me. But Nick's here. Okay, so fine. But they've given Josh the quarterback decision? Or he's got a big hand in the quarterback decision?
Yeah, I don't like that.
So you're right. On one hand, he's the one who identified Cutler as not the guy. Good. But then you did draft Tebow. And you help bring him here. And, like, so is this why they're looking at Manziel? What's so funny?
I'm laughing because I think it's easy to identify a quarterback who sucks. That's why, like, the league's filled with people who are going to identify bad quarterbacks.
Now, look, I know we crap all over Cutler, but the guy does have arm talent.
He
just
blows.
A loser.
He blows. He's a loser.
Arm talent.
He sucks.
How do you feel about them? Go ahead. Finish it.
I'm okay. Again, overall, the Manziel experiment. Like, to me, there's almost two separate discussions here. One is Manziel in and of himself. Yes, take a flyer. Give a crack at it, sure. But do I want Josh to be the guy to cultivate him? No. The whole idea to me is have Belichick do it.
See, I'm almost better with Josh coaching the guy versus picking the guy.
I want Bill all the way around.
Yeah, me too. Of course I do. Of course. You want Bill all the way around. Especially with, let's face it, a third rail kind of guy like Johnny Manziel. Like, that could go the other way for a variety of reasons, which we all know about. So, right, you would want an older, steadier hand with that.
I just think that with Manziel, the credibility of the guy delivering the message is huge. Because he's a nut.
Okay, but overall, I think, Maz, you would agree with this sentiment that this is the position you're now in because you did trade the future, and so now you're left to wallow in the muck and shop at the dollar store for guys like Johnny Manziel and entrust Josh McDaniels, Mr. Tim Tebow, to find someone in the second and third round. Like, that is a far fall from sitting there with the next guy for the next 10 years in Jimmy Garoppolo.
You better have your hands in a lot of cookie jars is what I would do. Unless you have a top 10 pick in the draft, which they don't. In fact, top 5 pick in the draft. You better start grabbing at a lot of different guys and hope you hit on one.
Yeah, start grabbing it. And that's the next question. How do you feel about them trying to find their next guy in the second and third rounds versus up high? We'll get to that with your calls right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blend force trauma to run it right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Made back Brady up for a couple of years.
I'll go to New England in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat?
In a heartbeat.
That's not too much pressure
following up the goat?
There's a competition that he would be confident in going into, and that's the second string position. Brian Hoyer, Johnny Manziel both played together in Cleveland, so that second string competition will be as high as ever, and also be like a memory for both of them, and the best man will prevail.
Belichick brought in Tebow one time. I mean, why not bring in Manziel? I'll see him in training camp.
But that first voice you heard there was Johnny Manziel, caught on TMZ coming out of a club, Murray?
That is correct, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that should make you feel better. A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they say, this is in one of the 12 steps at AA, they tell you what you should do now. When you're trying not to drink and try not to, when you're trying to stay away from all the bad habits you fell into, what you should really do is go right back to the places where you once did those bad habits and stay there and, you know, you should frequent the exact same places that got you in trouble in the first place. Oh, wait, they tell you the exact opposite?
Right, yeah. Avoid them, yeah.
They also try to bog you down with all that God stuff, too. So why not try to test yourself to see if you're really
Would
clean?
You stop?
Walk right back through those gates.
So, fine. He goes.
Maybe he likes to dance.
He goes right back into the club where he drinks seltzer water. That's going to work. And then that's Nate Burleson and the crew on NFL Network talking about Manziel to the Patriots. Do you want him? So that's that. Okay, we got that. We got the Bruins stuff on the table. And do you want to be drafting a quarterback in the second, third round? Are you comfortable with that?
No.
Okay, so.
I am.
We'll get to that in a second. Let me get in some of the phones. Matthew in Framingham. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Murray, the arm talent in comparison to Cutler with Manziel, not too good. But I agree with you there, Maz. It's McDaniels that wanted him. And Felga, I'm with you. He is going to be another good college quarterback, another Tebow. But you know what? Despite all that, I want him. Because if there's one place that can turn him around, I'd say it would be the New England Patriots and you know, their whole spiel. But I want to talk about the Patriots because this has been stewing, and I am just so angry because I feel like it's over. Our dynasty is over. That's how I feel right now. And it's because of three people's egos. Mm-hmm. It's Brady, it's Belichick, and it's Kraft, and they're all to blame for different reasons. Brady, he's the one who forced our future Garoppolo out the door. And Kraft is the one who ultimately made that decision.
Who let him, yeah.
And then Belichick, forget about it. Belichick, he's the one I'm the most angry at because I think that this whole mutiny, as I call it, started when he threw the Super Bowl away by sitting our arguably best defensive available player. You know, he sat him, and now we have Gronk. What is he about to star in a movie, I think? He's got a major role in a movie. So who knows what's going to happen with Gronk?
All right, Matthew, it's not over.
Brady won't even reconstruct his contract.
Listen, babe.
He won't do an extension.
It's not over.
He kicks Garoppolo out the door.
It's not over, Matthew. You're going 12-4, and you're going to be in the divisional game and probably the AFC title game. You'll be right back where you started. I don't know. I can't guarantee anything after that. Okay? Because, again, if you got holes or there's problems, they'll catch up. They tend to catch up. Even might take the very last half of the last game, but they catch up. So I can't guarantee you a championship, but you're going to be right there next year. Is it too much to say the thing's over? It is too much to say the thing's over. I do think that it's going to hasten the end. Right? If they could have certainly gotten 10 more years out of it with Garoppolo, with a strong transition with Belichick. Like, that was, they blew that chance. But even if they were all on the same page and they were all happy and it was fully functional and everyone was getting out of it what they wanted, I think they could all, you know, so I think this thing has a year to go where it could have had three. That's sort of what I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, though, to sit here today and say Belichick and Brady have gone to their last Super Bowl. That was the last one. I don't feel that that's wrong at all. I mean, I'm not telling you it's right. I'm just telling you I think that's possible.
Well, then that's fine. They're losing in the divisional round in an upset or in the AFC title game. They're going to be right there.
Oh, I think they're going to make the playoffs. Yeah, sure.
But not just that. They're going to be sitting there with the bye, and they're going to have the tomato can game, and then we're going to see in the AFC title game. Are they on the road or are they at home? And does Brady pull another one out of his keister? But that's where they're going to be.
I'm not totally convinced of that. I could see
there's no one in the division to challenge them enough to lose the division. And then
I could see them losing in the division round.
Oh, no. I'm sorry about losing the division.
No. I know.
So you're at least
in the division round.
Yeah, okay, but if you're at home, it's usually from that, it's a tomato can.
And they almost lost to Jacksonville this year.
That was the AFC title game.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's Tennessee, Jacksonville.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that Tennessee game.
Yes, it was the, it was AFC South Murderers Row that you got. So you still have the AFC to contend. No, they're right there this year.
Who's the last Super Bowl loser to get back to the Super Bowl?
Been a long time.
I think it's the Bills. I think it's the Buffalo Bills. Going back to what, 25 years now? 20 plus years? I think it's the Bills. So, like, and, you know, I just don't think the Patriots are exempt from that. They're not immune to that.
Zdeno Chara, 1 year, $5 million with incentives. Bob in Foxborough, do you like that for Zdeno Chara?
I do like it. And, you know, I'm calling on 2 points on Chara. Matt, first off, I agree with you. You know, Tom Brady selling us bags of peanuts, and you see him with resistance bands. You have Chara, you know, biking the Alps and doing, you know, 450 pull-ups every year. I mean, what's he on? What's he selling? I'm buying. And my second point is, you know, I'm one of those guys, I played the game, but, you know, the non-fantasy thing I noticed about Chara this year was, Felg, you probably know it off the top of your head, but there was one game where he had a shift. He killed the entire penalty.
Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh.
He was on another minute after that. After 3 minutes, I was getting tired just watching him. And next thing you know, he gets in a fight with a behemoth.
Yep.
And he wins that fight.
It's Pittsburgh, I think.
I've never seen
it was.
Professional hockey. Something like that in my life. I'll let you guys talk.
Yeah, I just think he's sort of established his captain bona fides. I'm trying to say established. He's been the captain for, however many years. But I just feel like he's more of a captain as we go forward. With every day, he's more of a captain and more of a leadership guy. And I don't know, I like him more every day. I do. I like him more every day. I am curious. Joe Haggerty floated this last night, about they give Char an extension, but they give Bergeron the C. And I wonder, there's a press conference today at 4:30. I just wonder if that's a shoe to drop. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't do it. I think Char feels more like a captain with every day that goes forward. He feels more like a captain.
I'll tell you, though, if he's ever to agree to that, isn't Bergeron the guy you'd agree to give it to?
Of course. Of course. But it's not necessary. Charlie in Fall River, quickly, what was your biggest problem with that hit on Grezik last night?
Well, I think if you can put it in a textbook what intent to injure is, I think that would do it because he came from so far. He was 30 feet away.
Yeah.
And to defend Grizzlick, he didn't even know he was there. I think what Grizzlick was trying to do was freeze the puck against the boards to kill the period.
He was.
He didn't know he was there. He came from so far. And it was right after Marchand made that hit. And my question to you, gentlemen, is if Bergeron was the one that made that hit, would the league have seen this differently? Because I think they would have.
So if Bergeron had been the one that put, who was it, on his
Shifley.
Keister? Yeah, Shifley on his Keister. So you're saying, well, see, I think the fact that it was Marchand putting Shifley on his Keister was what brought Morrissey down. Because I think Marchand gets everyone's dander up, right? Like, it's on. So if that were Bergeron who hit Shifley like that, Morrissey may not even have come down into the fray. But I think that when Marchand's involved in anything, people overreact. And I just think that's what happened there. But the caller's right. A previous caller put it perfectly. The problem with the hit was the context of the hit. Second left, puck in the corner, horn about to sound. This guy comes down from the blue line. He's a defenseman.
Completely needless.
It was the context of the hit. How do you feel about drafting a quarterback in the second or third rounds as your next guy? How do you feel about it?
I'm okay with it. That's exactly what I would do.
I'm a hard no. I'm a hard no on any quarterback being drafted by this team this year. You can't waste picks when you have this many holes on defense and you're trying to take advantage of what's left of Tom Brady's window.
Let me give you players drafted in the second round or lower.
Okay.
Quarterbacks in the last, I'm going to take out last year because it's too early. Let's start in 16. So 16, 15, 13, the 5 years between 2012 and 2016, the following quarterbacks were taken in the second round or later. Dak Prescott, fourth round. Derek Carr, second round. Jimmy Garoppolo, second round. A.J. McCarron, fifth round. Russell Wilson, third round. Nick Foles, third round. Kirk Cousins, fourth round. How many guys did I just give you? I just give you seven?
About that, yeah.
I just gave you seven quarterbacks six or seven quarterbacks you should feel good about. You should feel good if Dak Prescott, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, Russell Wilson, Nick Foles, Kirk Cousins. Six. Six guys were drafted in the second round or later, from 2012 to 2016, can you find a franchise quarterback now, Maz, in the lower rounds easier than you ever have been before?
Yes, absolutely. No question about it.
Feels that way. It feels that way.
Yeah, I think the position, the game has changed in such a way that you can integrate some of these guys and make them pretty decent players. Yep, I do.
Now, there's some real bags of crap in here, too. I mean, I'm not going to kid you. Quarterbacks drafted in the second to third round last year include DeShone Kizer, Davis Webb, C.J. Beathard. In 2016, quarterbacks include Christian Hackenberg, Jacoby Brissett. Feels like a functional NFL quarterback. Cody Kessler. The Raiders took Connor Cook in the fourth round before Dak Prescott. In 2015, Garrett Grayson, third round of the Saints. Never heard of him. Sean Mannion, third round of the Rams. Bryce Petty, Brent Hundley with the Packers, can't play. Trevor Siemian, seventh round. I mean, there's some buckets of crap. I mean, don't get me wrong. But it feels like you can find that guy. And that's why I think like system and coaching and all of that is so important. I was thinking about this about the Jets and their trade up, you know, last week or the week before. See, the Jets have to do that because they have to draft someone who can play because they don't have the capability of developing it themselves. They don't have the structure, the coaching, the program. Shouldn't Belichick be able to take someone with B-plus tools and over time get them into A-range play? Like, isn't that the whole point of having Belichick?
Yes.
So, like, I think that's Garoppolo. Garoppolo probably couldn't play on day one, but by the time you get to year three, year four, he knew what he was doing.
Well, why didn't that happen with Ryan Mallett or Kevin O'Connell, whatever the hell his name was, or some of these other bums he's taken in the past?
You still have to pick the right guy. Doesn't happen with everyone, but I think that that's the benefit of having Bill Belichick. You should be able to take someone in the second or third round, and he should be able to make chicken salad out of chicken poop. You know, loose translation there, right? So, especially if it's Belichick. So, like, I don't know, the last couple of years, Dak Prescott, fourth round, Russell Wilson, third round, Derek Carr, second round, Nick Foles, third round, Kirk Cousins, fourth round. There are some guys down there if you find them.
Yeah, now look, a couple of those guys, like, you said McCarron too, right?
Yep, fifth round.
So a couple of those guys aren't, you know, true starters, what I would say.
Well, no, I mean, then I give you a list of also-rans, but those six guys?
And let's calm down on Nick Foles just because he made a deal with Satan for 2 weeks.
Okay, Garoppolo, Wilson, Foles, Cousins. Foles just won a Super Bowl against you. I'm going to put him on the list.
Right, five of those guys, though, are starters, Murray, is what I'm saying.
And
right?
Foles should be.
Right, so that's, you know, six out of 32, that's almost 20%. So, like, what I'm saying is how many quarterbacks are taken in the first round that people miss on? A truckload. And you got 20% of them that came out of the second round or later? I'll take my chances. I don't want them spending their first round picking a quarterback.
Felger and Mazz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're going to debut a new feature on the Felger and Mazz show.
I love new features.
It's a new feature and a new development, and it's just a knockoff on an old idea. And it really needs no explanation. It's really pretty simple. It's called the Felger and Mazz 5-Minute Interview. The only thing I felt, and I think we're still debating, is should it be the Felger and Mazz 3-Minute Interview or the Felger and Mazz 5-Minute Interview?
Let me see how this one goes, then we can cut it to three.
It, of course, comes with production.
It's the 5-Minute Interview with Felger and Mazz, where they talk to a random guest without the grab-ass. Go.
It's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Love it.
I mean, we set the standard for guestless radio. I think there's not a radio show in America that has had or will have fewer guests than this program.
Yes, it's guestless, like wearing no underwear.
So I just wonder if we just take it a tick back in the other direction, but no room for grab ass, no room for needless questions. Get in, get out, state your business, and then we get on with our lives. So I just thought we'd try it. What do you think?
I like the idea. We have to make sure that the guests are aware that it is a capsule form of an interview.
Are you listening, guest, on the line? Go ahead, Jimmy. It's the Felger and Mazz 5-Minute Interview. Go.
It's the Felger and Mazz 5-Minute Interview.
Talk to a guest without the grab ass in a short amount of time. Go.
Greg Bedard joins us from the NFL owners meetings in Orlando. Greg, thanks for joining us on the AT&T Expert Hotline. You tell me, do you want Johnny Manziel on the Patriots? If you do, why? If not, why not?
I would be open to it. I scouted him at Texas A&M when they almost upset Alabama. I waited. I talked to Nick Saban to get his opinion, somebody who I covered. Nick said that guy can play in the NFL, and we know how Nick and Bill get along. I just think the talent is there. The question has always been, does he have it together off the field? If he does, I'm willing to take a chance. If he doesn't, smell you later.
Okay, so Greg, Belichick and Kraft both said that they had met together with Tom Brady since the end of the season. Everyone acknowledges the meeting. Have they really cleared the air on anything?
From what I hear, they have not. I hear that there is a lot of work still there to be done, and I didn't know what to make of it at the time, but now those guys not offering many details, I think that maybe explains it.
We will allow occasional quick follow-ups on the Felger and Maz five-minute interview. Where do you think the fault lines still lie in the rift between those guys?
I think it starts with Guerrero. I think that, you know, that's sort of a bargaining point. You know, like, is Tom going to do his deal? Is he going to get his guy back? I think the whole Guerrero thing goes to, is he appreciated, would work? Like, you know, I've been doing this for like 20 years. Can I at least get my guy in the building? Like, can I have that, please? And so I think that's sort of where it starts. So if they can find common ground on that, then I think the ball starts to roll positively down the hill.
Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. You wrote on your website the other day that you have heard that a strong defensive voice basically advised Belichick to sit Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl, and he merely followed the recommendation. What else can you tell us, big boy?
I've been working to get it confirmed. I mean, I don't want to out the person unless I can get it nailed down. But, yeah, I mean, I heard from a very good source that the whole genesis of Butler not starting the Super Bowl started with somebody else.
Okay, Greg, go ahead.
And why? Why? What did that other person see? Or not
well,
see.
I think from what I understand, it was a combination of his undisciplined play last season with, you know, what the Eagles would do with the read option and, you know, and tucking the ball and play action fakes and things like that. They thought he was going to be a liability in that game with how much he peeks into the backfield, and he's been doing that all season. And then, you know, and then you combine that with, I think it went from he's not starting, he's still going to be in the game plan as like nickel dimeback to he lost a bit of focus during the week when he realized he wasn't starting, and then it kind of went from there.
Okay, Greg, there's a story today that Rob Gronkowski is actually going to be in a movie with Mel Gibson, I believe. Is there any additional clarity on the Gronk situation, and do you expect the Patriots to draft a tight end?
There is not clarity. I saw Drew Rosenhaus at the league meetings yesterday. I asked him, I said, do you have any update on your tight end? He said, I do not. And I said, all I hear is that he's at the facility working out. And he's like, I can't even comment on that, but I appreciate you asking the question. So from what I hear down here, and I'm going to write about this more on my site because I sort of went around and I gauged, is there a trade market? Is it possible? That sort of thing. You know, from what I hear, he's not on the market at this time. And as far as them drafting a tight end, I would think that would happen. But, you know, who knows? We'll have to see the way the draft board falls.
That's okay. A long bell.
Now you can stop with the bell already.
I'm up.
We're up. Okay, that's it. Thanks, big boy, thanks, Greg, for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Now I really feel dirty.
All right, beat it. See ya.
You should feel dirty.
Except for overtime.
You want to be dirty.
He does want to be. He does want to sling the mud and sling in the rumors, doesn't he? He does. All right, so there's the debut of the Felger and Maz five-minute interview. That went like what, Jimmy? What was the official time on that?
4:20.
Little long.
Oh, I like it.
I like the three-minute interview. The Felger and Maz three-minute interview.
Well, then you got to eliminate the follow-ups.
Exactly. Agreed.
Eliminate the follow-ups.
I put the follow-ups in just to get us to five.
I do love the clock in the background. I think we should keep it there maybe a little lower, but we should keep the clock in the background.
It adds a sense of urgency.
It's time for the Felger and Maz 5-minute interview. Let's go. Talk.
Yeah, I'll switch it to three. I think three is more appropriate.
Yeah, it's
in
the,
and out.
Yeah,
five is probably too long.
From the 3-minute mark to the 5-minute mark, I'm like, all right. All right, we got it.
You should be able to time this thing with an egg timer. It should take no longer than the time it takes to boil an egg.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Snap from Patrick Lewis. Four-man Alabama rush. Got him.
No, they didn't.
Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
Can't teach that, can you? And you can't defend that.
When you have an opportunity to stop a playmaker like Manziel, you got to get him. And this time, Alabama, almost a fumble of the ball. That's what kind of threw everybody off on the play. He almost loses it, re-catches it, and keeps his wits about him.
Johnny Manziel's most famous game, most famous play, when he beat Alabama at A&M 6 years ago.
Well, was that long ago?
Years ago.
Wow. Still really impressive.
6 years ago, dude. And Murray still wants him. But Bedard would take him, too. That was one of the takeaways from our five-minute interview. Bedard also, again, believes that Bill Belichick was advised to bench Malcolm Butler by a strong defensive voice. He doesn't want to out that person yet, but he's getting there. I'm telling you, the story's going to come out. So who is that strong defensive voice? Would Matt Patricia be the leader in the clubhouse? Would have to be. Or does it mean a player, Devin McCourty? Or the obvious teacher's pet in Pat Chung, who just got $3 million for really no reason.
Hush money.
Excellent, Jimmy. So there's that. And Bedard's take on the rift between Belichick, Brady not really settled, and the fault line is exactly what I thought it was, or according to him. It's still the Guerrero thing. You know, why hasn't Brady restructured his contract? Well, it's because Kirk Cousins just got $80 million guaranteed, or it's because Garoppolo just got that. No. I don't think Brady cares what those guys make. I think Brady's in a mode where the team goes to him and says, we need a favor on the contract, and Brady says, I ain't doing any favors at this time. Where's my deference on the things that I need? And it's really more of an internal thing than it is about what anyone else is making. So those are the takeaways from Bedard. Here's the thing it's a really small thing, and when I tell you what it is, you're going to be like disappointed because it's a nothing thing. But I just found it interesting, and I think it's fair. And the headline in Pro Football Talk is, owners vote down West Coast team's proposal limiting early kickoffs. And so what happened here is that the 49ers, Chargers, and Cardinals got together and proposed a rule change to the league that would have limited how many road games Pacific time zone teams would have to play at 1 o'clock or noon in the East and Central time zones.
Yeah, they wanted it capped at 3 games, I think, right?
Yes. So they said that no Pacific team should have to play more than 3 away games in a 1 o'clock or earlier kickoff. The Central games are at noon. And for example, they say the 49ers have road games this year in Green Bay, Minnesota, Kansas City, and Tampa next season. The rule proposed would mean that at least one of those games would have to be at 4 p.m. And the league shot it down because they want maximum TV flexibility. But I think that's fair. Because I'll tell you, I think that is one of the biggest disadvantages in the league.
I mean, based on the gambling numbers, those teams lose, like, historically.
The numbers there are dramatic. Absolutely right, Maz. The West to East, and it's not as bad East going to West. It's bad. But those games always start at, 4 o'clock on your clock, right? I mean, they
Well, it's less of a shock to the system because, effectively, the West coming East, you're playing a 10 a.m. game.
Exactly.
Right? To go in the other way, if you're playing at 1 o'clock, it's like 4 Eastern. So it doesn't hit you the same way. And look, anybody that's ever done any length of travel, I mean, I shouldn't say anybody, but some people disagree on this. I think coming West to East, always tougher. Always tougher than
it is, no question.
Getting your body cranked up when you think it's 8 in the morning, you know, is hard. It's a harder thing to do.
And again, the numbers really bear it out, that those West Coast teams coming to East on the 1 o'clock game just get smushed. And I thought that was a fair sort of thing. We don't have to play. There's really no reason for the Chargers to come here and play at 1. Why can't you play at 4?
I saw it last week that this proposal was going to be on the table, and I thought, oh, that's an interesting one. Like, and so I am a little surprised that there isn't a little bit more sympathy for that, for the teams that do that.
Okay, so that's just a small thing, but it struck me. Manziel, Patriots, any Bedard stuff? The Bruins stuff, all on the board. Anthony and Medford, what do you got on the Patriots?
As far as I'm concerned, Malcolm Butler could have been blindfolded and still played better than Jordan Richards and Johnson Batamosi. But on Manziel, I mean, Mike, him and Garoppolo both came out of the 2014 draft. Manziel was 22nd, he dropped, and Jimmy G was 62nd. You know, they both were fairly the same size. Johnny played a major college and Jimmy Small. I think it's all off field, but he has the talent, Johnny Manziel. And I was wondering what you guys think. If Jimmy Garoppolo went somewhere else and didn't have the toolage of Bill, how good you think he would have been a few years of backup or somebody else? You think
Anthony,
would be as good as he is now?
He might have been nothing. If he goes somewhere that doesn't really believe in him and doesn't really, he could be nothing.
Take the two guys he just threw out there again, because Manziel,
what if Manziel were drafted here and Garoppolo
right,
somewhere?
Flip him. Put Garoppolo in Cleveland and Manziel in New England, and what would it be?
This is going to sound really cheesy, because, like, I know. But I think the ball comes out of Jimmy Garoppolo's hand better than Manziel. Just watching his pro day stuff, he sort of throws like a little guy. Garoppolo is a little guy, but is the release, it's right here on the ear, and it's bang, it's out. Like from day one, I said, the ball comes out right with Jimmy Garoppolo. It just does. He knows how to his release is flawless. God-given, I guess. I don't know. And Manziel, not so much. He's got to work to get the ball out, it feels to me, a little bit more.
Yeah, and I'm not going to debate that point with you. I'm just telling you, Manziel throws a better ball than Tebow did.
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. But look, I never admit, in all my Tebow nonsense, I never said the guy could throw. I didn't. I said the league was going in a different direction, and if you coach him and blah, 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 blah. But I never sat there and said that the guy's got a good NFL arm.
I mean, looking at Manziel's college numbers, and I know they're college numbers, okay? 69% completion percentage. 69%. And he threw 63 touchdowns and 22 picks. I mean, roll
the... Yeah, in 2 years, he threw for over 8,000 yards and ran for over 2,000.
Roll the dice.
Worth a shot.
Roll the dice.
The talent's there. He's just a bit of a knucklehead.
I know, see, but
putting it mildly.
I think he needs a hard-ass coach. I do. I think he needs a guy above him who's got credibility and will preach discipline and work ethic, and that's Bill.
Don't let him go out with Daron Harmon either. Keep him away. Come on the other side of the room.
It's a good thing they traded Chandler Jones.
Oh, God. Tony and Lynn. Hi, Tony.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What do you got?
Well, I just want to say, you know, the Bruins, it's so great watching the Bruins now after the last couple of years. And just there's no dead weight on this team. You know, there's no Jimmy Hayes. There's no Bolesky cranking up space. They let guys go.
So true.
You know, Heinen got his 15th last year. Milan Lucic, the last time I checked, had 10 goals this year. He's got 4 years of $22 million left. Good God. You know what I mean?
You know, you made such a good point, Tom. I've never thought of this. Like, you know, every year, even when they were winning the Cup, didn't we look at a couple guys on the team and go, would you get that guy sucks? Like, whether it was, just go through it. It used to be Ferentz for a little bit, we used to pick on. Then it was Dennis Weidman, then Cabrillet, Jimmy Hayes, you name it. Like, for years, even in this recent run, even when they were really good, you looked at a player or two and go, I can't stand that. He blows. I can't really do that on this team.
No, you can pick it. I was just looking at the list to say, you know, who would you pick at? And like,
Carlo's had some bad nights.
Okay, so you could pick at Carlo. You could go, you could say Krug's a little overpaid, but you know what? Do you know Krug's in like the top 10 in defensemen and scoring in the league?
He was huge last night.
I mean,
look at him, say he should be third pairing, too much money. But I don't look at, I mean, you know, like, there are guys, you watch Jimmy Hayes play and you want to throw up. And you would watch, like, just, even when they were good, there were guys, you're like, you disgust me.
You might have been able to say Backus, but he had a bounce back year, right? Backus has bounced back. Do you want to pick on Miller and McQuaid? Maybe, though, but they are what they are.
Miller's gotten better. He's been good.
They are stout, you know, third pairing type defensemen. That's what those guys are.
I just think they're small. And I think a game like last night really highlights it out there. When you got Lehane running around out there, Scheifele running around out there, Myers running around out there, Winnipeg has some size, and you are getting throttled legally and illegally. And I think that without Nash and without Backus, that really comes out. And if you want to play Greslick, fine. But now you got Krug and Greslick. And if Donato, you want Donato to play, and who wouldn't with that release? That's just a lot of little guys, and I think it adds up. And that's why Backus coming back is huge, and he's going to. But Nash, feeling like Nash is such a big guy with this, because you've got to match some of that size out there.
I hope they get him back. I hope, you know, it sounds or looks like it might have been a concussion. I hope it's not super bad that, like, they've already pulled the plug on him. I hope they get him back. You make a trade like that, you deserve to have that guy in the playoffs.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.